her story really made me reflect on my approach that I was taking.
I started to see that the flaws that he was mentioning that he had could apply to me.
That was something that was a little bit tricky for me to hear, because those two things don't really fit together. They contradict a little bit.
I just kind of taken for granted that, you know, not everyone experiences that.
And I was opposed to it at first. I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't like it.
But I had to, you know, stick with that moment and listen to find that sort of common ground.
Hey, it's Julie, and welcome to a very special Top of Mind and Uncomfy crossover episode. As you probably know, on Top of Mind, we're out to tackle tough topics in a way that will challenge you, help you feel more empathy, and empower you to become a better citizen, a kinder neighbor, and a more effective advocate. Well, as you can imagine, with that focus, we're bound to feel a little challenged ourselves occasionally. And on Uncomfy, guests share stories of moments when they encountered a situation or perspective that challenged them. But instead of getting defensive or bailing out, they stuck with the discomfort, and they're glad they did. So that is what we're going to do today. You will hear stories from each member of the Top of Mind and Uncomfy teams about a particular idea, interview, or episode that caused them to have a stick with it moment, and we'll talk about how it went. So let's get started.
Hi, my name is Elena, and I've been an assistant producer on Top of Mind for 2 years.
It's so great to have you, Elena. Thanks for being on the team and for joining me today on this special episode.
Yes, of course. So happy to be here.
So your Stick With It story centers around an episode that we did earlier this year about race in America, and in particular, what it means to be white, what whiteness represents, how it affects life in America, for those of all racial backgrounds. And so what were you bringing to this episode? What was the background that we need to know?
So I grew up in a very predominantly white community, small farm town in Idaho. So I just grew up very sheltered and didn't have a lot of exposure to other races. And so I was listening to her interview, Debbie Irving, a racial justice educator, and she was talking about white culture and different ways that white culture represents itself in our lives. And just this concept itself was a new concept to me. And I was like, what do you mean that I have a culture and I have a perspective that is because of my white skin tone?
Hmm. Or and at least because of your experience in
a
America
white culture, yeah,
as a person with white skin tone, right? She was talking about how there actually are some sort of hallmarks of how we think and behave as white people that are pretty common across white-skinned Americans.
And the one for me was punctuality and working on according to the clock, because I really value being punctual. I value being on time and respecting other people's times. That's how I viewed it. And so when she was talking about clock time or functioning according to the clock as a white culture thing, that had never occurred to me.
Yeah, let's go ahead and listen. So this is Debbie Irving. She's a racial justice educator. And here she is talking about the way punctuality works in white culture as opposed to maybe other cultures.
In the United States, we follow something called clock time as opposed to event time. So clock time means I say, Julie, do you want to come to my house on Saturday for dinner? Yeah, what time, Debbie? Well, 6 o'clock. We are going to show up right around 6, and I'm probably going to plan to wait till around 6:20 till everyone's there, and we'll have a seated dinner, and the whole thing is very timed. Event time is very different. That means I say, you want to come over Saturday night for dinner? Sure. The understanding between people who live in event time is I'll get there after the rest of my day's events. There's an understanding that we're all fluidly moving through our days, and there doesn't have to be this exact alignment minute to minute to minute.
She was pointing out also that event time that has less to do with punctuality based on the clock and more to do with punctuality based on sort of when you get the rest of your day finished, that tends to be more common a lot of times in some communities of color, and also in some other countries. And so a stick with it moment often entails sort of some information that challenges your worldview, even your sense of self just a little bit. What was it? What were you feeling?
I was feeling exactly that. So I was also coming from this perspective of my dad served a 2-year proselyting mission in Jamaica for in his early 20s. And so he shared a lot of Jamaican culture with us, and part of that was telling stories about how he would schedule lessons according to clock time, his white culture time. And Jamaican people were operating on a different time, on event time. So it was really hard. They often would show up to the house and there would be no people, and he didn't understand it. And as a child and a teen, I was like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Like, what? I mean, where were they? Like, why wouldn't they, you know, be on time? And I didn't realize that I had this perspective because of my white culture. I had this experience and I was like, why would they not do that? And then I felt a little called out by Debbie Irving. I was like, what do you mean? But you got to be on time. But the idea that event time might be even more respectful to them, because you're respecting other people's things that they have to do in the day, and that we're just going to show up when we're both done with the things that we have to do. And just that concept was so different. And I was opposed to it at first. I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't like it. But then I continued to work on the episode and, you know, sit with this information and be uncomfortable just a little bit. And I realized, yeah, like, we have different times and not one is right or wrong. And I have perspectives because of the white culture that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that it is better or the default of any other perspective and any other racial culture that other people were brought in. It's just different.
Yeah. Lots to think about there, but I really appreciate you being vulnerable to share. I think especially around this topic of race, talking about how realizations that we've had, recognition of blind spots can be scary. And I think that's one of the things we were trying to do with that episode was acknowledge, like, this is uncomfortable and that's okay, because it's the only way we're going to get to any kind of recognition.
So. That's what we're here to do. We're just going to dive right in.
Yeah. Well, it's part of what makes you an excellent producer of the podcast. Elena, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Happy to share.
Okay, friends, I would love to know if you have had a stick with it moment related to race. Maybe you had one while even listening to the episode we were just talking about. It can be a little scary to talk about, so I recognize if you don't want to share it, but I would love to hear what you're experiencing as you listen to Top of Mind episodes. What challenges you? What opens your mind? What gets you thinking in a different way? Email me, topofmind@byu.edu. Or if you have a story you'd love to share on the Uncomfy podcast, you can reach us at uncomfy@byu.edu. Hey, it's Julie. There is another podcast I think you're going to like from the BYU Radio family of podcasts, so I wanted to pass along the word. It's called In Good Faith. Join host Stephen Cap Perry as he connects with believers from various religions, Christians, Buddhists, Jews, Muslims, and much, much more. Listening to their captivating stories is an opportunity to deepen our own understanding of faith, religion, and spirituality. Plus, Stephen is really well-traveled, and his global perspective brings a unique richness to each conversation. Elevate your appreciation for the divine with In Good Faith. It's an inspiring journey of unity and enlightenment. Listen anywhere you get podcasts. Our next story comes from another of our student producers, Vanessa Goodman. Hey there, Vanessa.
Welcome. Hey, Julie.
How long have you been on Top of Mind?
It's been over 2 years now.
Time flies.
Seriously.
You've become quite an expert. It's so great to have you on the team. Let's dive straight into your Stick With It story. So this one pertains to an episode that we did about retirement in America. What was going on for you that led to your Stick With It moment?
So as I was researching for new potential episodes, I came across some really interesting information about retirement and some research that had come out. And all of it was super interesting to me. But at the same time, it was a little discouraging because retirement wasn't something that I had thought much about before. You know, I'm young, still in college, not really thinking about that far down the road. But as I came across this information, I knew that it would be a really interesting topic to explore on Top of Mind. But at the same time, I didn't want to think about it too much personally because all of the information that I was seeing was pretty hopeless, saying things like, oh, no matter how hard you try, you'll never be able to retire, especially for someone in my generation. Because of the way Social Security is, because of the way the system's set up, try all you want, but it's still going to be super hard and it's probably not going to happen.
So what did you do as a result of that?
So like I said, I was still really interested by the information, so I kept researching, but I kind of took myself out of it. I emotionally detached from what I was reading, what I was learning about, because it was just hard to think about. It felt really out of my control, and it just made me want to pretend like it didn't exist, pretend like it would never happen.
So you were intentionally making this episode not at all personal to you. And of course, because you're young, you can maybe have that luxury. People heard in the episode, if they've listened to me talking about how I was feeling super anxious, because now I'm at the point, just turning 50, where I kind of can't really justify not thinking about it anymore. So it was uncomfortable for me in a different way. But what was it then as about the episode? What was a perspective that made you uncomfortable? Newly uncomfortable in thinking about retirement.
Yeah, so as part of the episode, we wanted to share a bunch of different experiences about ways people were approaching retirement. And a lot of them were disheartening to hear, but some of them were on the more positive side, but not all of them looked exactly like the perfect retirement, right? A lot of them had some compromise or some sacrifices involved. And so that reframed my thinking a little bit, and that especially was the case with the story of Elaine Jarvie.
So this is a woman, she and her husband are in their early 70s. They are now retired. They're traveling part of the year in their Airstream trailer. But they're also still working side gigs. Let's listen to a quick bit from Elaine Jarvie.
And like I say, we're not financial geniuses. Our house isn't paid for yet. It's not, we're downsized and it's small. It's not a huge debt. But we're not ready just to walk away from everything or have total independence. And so our part-time jobs just make it so when we go somewhere, we can do about any activity we want.
Just hearing the birds in the background, when I spoke to her on Zoom, she was sitting outside of her trailer out in the Appalachian Mountains. And I was like, actually, sign me up for that. That looks great. What was it that was uncomfortable for you about thinking more deeply about the possibilities of retirement being maybe more positive?
Yeah. So her story really made me reflect on my approach that I was taking. You know, obviously I'm not to that point yet, but the way that they were able to find different ways to still travel and do what they wanted to do while simultaneously accepting that, you know, part-time jobs were necessary, downsizing their homes was necessary for them. And that would involve planning and being smart about things and thinking about it. And so my approach of avoidance would never lead me to the outcome that they have, because they had to think about what was most important for them in retirement and what their priorities were and find ways to make that work. And that couldn't have come if they had just pretended like it didn't exist. So it made me rethink my approach, because maybe this is something that I should plan for, because just having no hope and living in delusion isn't going to help me get anywhere.
Words to live by, Vanessa. That's true, I'm sure. But also, any financial expert would tell you, start now, start early, so that you have less reason to feel hopeless as you get closer to retirement. And I actually think this notion that a lot of times detachment, avoidance, looking away from the issue or avoiding an uncomfortable, you know, a situation that's outside of our comfort zone is, you know, that is the more comfortable thing. That, like, that is exactly the kind of comfort that keeps us from growing and from experiencing new empathy or from progressing in some way or from being able to actually make a better decision in the future. So thank you so much for sharing your story, Vanessa, and for the great work that you do on the show.
Thanks for having me, Julie.
For our next story, I'm joined by senior producer James Hopes. Hey there, James. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks, Julie.
So on this special Uncomfy Top of Mind crossover episode, we are talking with the team about stick with it moments that they had while working on the podcast. So, James, which episode inspired your stick with it moment?
Yeah, this is an episode we did about how colleges are adjusting the ways they decide who gets in. And a big part of that episode was focused on the ACT and the SAT. And so coming into this episode, right, I have this a little bit of a bias in terms of when people tell me their test scores, I feel like I know something about it, right? I feel like the ACT and the SAT is a pretty good gauge of how intelligent someone's going to be.
I'm chuckling a little bit thinking what you would think of me if I told you what I got on the ACT, which was fine, above average, but not stellar. You must have got a really good score.
I mean, there was definitely, I'm proud of like the work that I put in to get the score that I got, and that's definitely informing some of my bias here.
Yeah. So what was challenging then for you? What was the perspective that caused you to feel a little uncomfortable in this episode?
Yeah, we talked to this professor at Columbia University, Nicholas Lemon, who wrote an influential book about the history of standardized test scores as they're used in the college application process. And a big part of his argument is that as the test scores have developed and they've changed in their purpose over time, that they don't really measure intelligence. They measure other things that aren't necessarily tied to how smart you are.
If you just want to admit by the SAT, full stop, you're going to get a class that is overwhelmingly white, living in the coasts more disproportionately, and upper middle class. If at the same time you say, no, we're not that school anymore, then the SAT is not your friend in achieving that.
That was something that was a little bit tricky for me to hear because I took a prep class in studying for the ACT. I put in a lot of work in sort of prep books on my own at time. And so I feel like I worked for the score that I got, and I'd like for it to sort of be reflective of my intelligence. But what he's saying there is that it's really more reflective of the resources I had access to. And that is in conflict with my sort of desire to get some sort of information about how smart people are from their test scores or how intelligent they are, right?
I mean, did you want to dismiss what he was saying? How did you sort of make sense of that in your mind?
Yeah. At first, I wanted to sort of gloss over it and be like, well, I agree in sort of a macro sense that test scores maybe aren't as important to colleges, but I want them to be important to me, right? But those two things don't really fit together. They contradict a little bit. So in sort of facing up to the fact that I had some contradiction in my beliefs, I was able to sort of parse out what I actually think about test scores and face up to the fact that when I hear people's test scores, I make assumptions about them that might not be true, right? I assume things about their intelligence when really what I learn when they tell me their test score is more about the context that they were raised in and the schools that they went to and the resources they had access to.
James, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Julie.
I'd love to hear about a stick with it moment you've had lately. With the 2024 presidential election just about a week away at this point, I can imagine many of us are having more than a few opportunities for uncomfy conversations. I'd love to hear how they've gone for you. You can email us uncomfy@byu.edu. We'll be right back to today's episode of Top of Mind. But first, are you ready to immerse yourself in the awe-inspiring world of nature? Then I recommend you listen to Constant Wonder. It's another great show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. Join host Marcus Smith in riveting conversations with individuals whose lives have been touched by Earth's beauty and mysteries. Uncover captivating stories that shed light on our planet's wonders, from history to science and beyond. If you crave enriching experiences and a deeper connection with the world around you, tune in to Constant Wonder. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Now, our next story actually deals directly with the U.S. elections. I've got Samuel Benson, who's another of our full-time producers in the hot seat for the moment. Hey there, Samuel.
Hello. Good to be here.
Which of the episodes do you want to talk about today?
Yeah, so this is a recent episode that we just did. It's about dealing with money in our elections in the U.S. and sort of looking at America's political money problem and how it affects us and some ways people are trying to solve it, essentially.
Something a lot of people feel strongly about, and actually a lot of people agree, needs to be fixed.
Correct.
So what was the challenging perspective in that episode for you?
Yeah. So first, it's just important for the context to know that I sort of fall more in the center politically, and I feel like the two parties that are sort of dominant in the U.S. don't represent me fully. So we had a guest on this episode who was representing his solution for the American money political problem was to further empower the political parties, which didn't seem like a great idea to me based on where I fall. So,
I mean, what was your inclination? No, that can't be right. Absolutely not. Shut it down.
That about sums it up. I'd say I was really tempted to just kind of write off this idea and be like, okay, no, I don't think that's the right solution.
It is definitely counterintuitive. So let's just listen to a tiny bit of what this particular guest's name is. Ray LaRaja. So he's a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. So here he is explaining a little bit why he thinks that political parties ought to be able to raise money more easily so that they can better compete with a lot of the outside money that's able to be spent by special interest groups sort of on an unlimited basis.
Their raison d'etre is to represent a lot of people. Now, we only have two major parties. Other countries have more, so some people want more choices. But to my mind, the organizations that should be managing most of this money are the political parties, because their goal is to win elections. And if you want to win elections, you have to mobilize and represent as many people as you can.
So, Samuel, what happened for you as you stayed open and curious to Ray LaRaja's argument?
Yeah. So, obviously, kind of the issue I saw with this initially was just that, like, oh, if they have more money, like the political parties, that's more power, and I don't feel like they need more power. But as I sat with it, I decided, okay, well, let's hear him out, let's see what he has to say. And I hadn't picked the guest for this, so I didn't know what his, you know, what his reasons were. I didn't know at this point. So by sticking with it, I was able to hear him say something that was very impactful to me personally and where I fall, which was that part of the reasoning for why he thinks this should happen is that it could actually ideally create a more moderating effect. Like he kind of said in the clip, the political parties represent the most amount of people, and part of their goal is to pick candidates who are the most likely to get elected by the most amount of people, right? And so they are more likely actually to pick more moderate candidates because they want to appeal to a wide range of people. Whereas these, like you mentioned, these special interest groups that are pouring so much money into these elections, they're way more likely to try and push candidates that have the more extreme views that I struggle with, you know? And so with that, I was like, oh, well, that sounds like that would actually help the issue that I have rather than exacerbate the problem I see. But I had to sit with it and, you know, stick with that moment and listen to find that sort of common ground. Cause if I had just written him off, I might not have been as receptive to that idea. And yeah. I wouldn't have seen that maybe this could be something that is actually helpful.
Totally get that. I had a similar experience with his argument, Samuel, so I'm glad that you brought that up. And of course, in the episode, he goes into a lot more detail, and we talk through exactly like how this would work and why he thinks it would work and what would have to happen as well to make sure that the parties didn't just, you know, abuse that power or take us into a more extreme direction. It's pretty nuanced, but that is kind of one of the common threads that we tend to find in ideas that we share on Top of Mind, as well as the kinds of stories that we're hearing over on the Uncomfy podcast. Are often that there is a little bit more nuance, that when we're able to set aside our judgment or at least stay open-minded a little longer, which is often uncomfortable, we can either end up finding some common ground that we weren't expecting or kind of having a realization that flips the lens a little bit. And I'm really glad that you were able to have that experience. And thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's so great to have you with us for this special Uncomfy Top of Mind crossover episode today. We've got two more stories from our team for you. And next up is Caleb Leach. He is another one of our student producers for Top of Mind. Caleb, hi.
Hi.
Now, your story actually comes from an episode of Top of Mind that hasn't quite released yet. It'll drop a little later this year. It's about the COVID pandemic and how it affected public trust in vaccines, which is a hot one, right, to touch, but we never shy away from the big topics. So, Caleb, tell me, as you've been working on this episode, what was the perspective that challenged you?
So, as I began to work on this episode, and we were looking for different perspectives of people on vaccines and just their experience with it, I stumbled across all these experiences about these people who had gone into their doctors, and their doctors had been really dismissive and just said, you know, you're overreacting, and kind of stopped listening to them. And I had been aware, like, I'd heard some stories about that in the past, But the reason this challenged me is I was reading these stories from these people, and I just kept on thinking, well, I mean, you kind of were overreacting a little bit. I mean, if I could kind of see if I were the doctor and you were in there, and I feel like you just jumped straight to like, and now my child is going to die. This is horrible. And I was like, well, like I could see where the doctors are coming from, but I was struggling to empathize with these people who just felt like their claims were being dismissed. And that's kind of where I had this stick with it moment as I was looking at all these experiences and trying to find some way to empathize with them. But I had to kind of confront my own biases before I could really, really connect with these people. But there was this interview we did for the podcast episode that really kind of struck me as I was researching this guest for the episode. And then when she came in and interviewed with you, Julie, part of her story just really, really struck me. And I kind of realized, okay, this is something I need to reevaluate.
So here's a clip from Heather Simpson. Really fascinating story. People are going to have to wait for the episode to hear the whole story. But she is a former social media influencer against vaccines, an anti-vaxxer, self-described. And she's had a kind of a turnabout and is now advocates for vaccines, but also works with doctors to try to help them to have better interactions with patients that can promote trust. She's a co-host of a podcast called Back to the Vax. But the story that she's telling at this particular moment is part of how she lost trust in the medical community. Her newborn, first child, was stopping breathing for like long periods of time at really low levels of oxygen. And she was terrified. And this went on for months. And she was really struggling to get any doctor to take her seriously. So here's a bit of her telling that story.
I was so scared. I set my alarm every 20 minutes to wake up to check to make sure my baby was alive. And that sounds like I'm exaggerating, but it was literally every 20 minutes for 2 months. And I kept going back to my pediatrician begging for a sleep study. And they were like, this is just your anxiety. I finally fought tooth and nail for a sleep study, and they granted me one. We drove 5 hours to Dallas to a sleep study. The sleep doctor herself said, listen, I will give you the sleep study under one condition, that you know I'm only doing this because of your anxiety.
So what did hearing Heather Simpson talk about her story change for you?
It's a very relatable story. And for me, I was able to just kind of put myself in her shoes and think about, you know, what if that were me? Right? What if I had a baby and no one was listening to me and I was seeking treatment? And so for me, I was kind of able to shift my thinking on that and realize, you know, these people, they definitely need to be listened to, even if you're reacting. And I actually had kind of my own medical experience with that, just like that week that I listened to that interview. I had been really sick since like the start of school, and I couldn't get over it. And I was just kind of struggling to come out on top. I wasn't sure what it was, and so I went to the doctor, and he runs all these tests, and they all come back negative. And I'm like, well, okay, but I'm still pretty sure that I'm sick. And you know, I kind of detailed my symptoms, but my biggest symptom was just like extreme fatigue. And I was sitting there in, you know, my doctor's office, just talking with them about this, and I like kind of this light went off in my head where I was like, you know, in a lot of these situations, these people come in, they're talking about this, and the doctor would just be like, well, you're just tired, you're working too hard, you're pushing yourself too far, like that's normal, like, but instead my doctor still listened to me, you know, I detailed my symptoms. And he was like, you know, okay, we'll run further tests because something is wrong, and we'll get to the bottom of this. And I guess before I'd always taken that for granted, but I realized, you know, maybe different communication styles, different as you're coming in, maybe doctors, right, have biases that just, I mean, they're normal people like we are, right? They're all struggling with the same things. And I guess after listening to Heather Simpson's story, after kind of putting myself in her shoes, I realized that there was all of this, you know, kind of my physician giving me the benefit of the doubt that I had just kind of taken for granted, that, you know, not everyone experiences that.
What do you think this is going to change for you moving forward, Caleb?
I think the biggest change would be just that I'm able to have more empathy for people. Even I was talking to my mom about this after I went to the doctor, and she was telling me, you know, her story is how she had gone into the doctor seeking medical treatment, and the doctor just been like, well, you have 7 kids. Like that's probably just what it is. Like you're probably tired or like whatever. because you have seven kids. And for years, she wasn't able to get treatment, and her doctors weren't taking her seriously. And I mean, she's my mom. I don't think, you know, even before this, I would have been like, well, mom, you know what? You probably just weren't being very articulate. You weren't helping your doctor like you should have. But I was able to really think about that and be like, well, wow, that's so hard, you know? And as I was talking to my parents about that and realizing my, you know, she talked about how she takes my dad with her now when she goes to the doctor. She's like, I feel like the doctor will take me more seriously. I kind of this blind spot that I never considered before. But being able to empathize with people and, you know, people who are having these experiences around me, and just hopefully being a more empathetic listener.
Caleb, thank you so much for sharing your story, your experience with us, and for the great work you're doing on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, up to this point, all of our stories have been inspired by Top of Mind episodes, but this final one was actually inspired by one of our uncomfy conversations recently.
My name is Henrique Prado. I'm from Brazil, and I've been on the Uncomfy team since we've launched this summer.
Henrique, it's so great to have you on the team. Thanks for coming onto this podcast episode. Which uncomfy conversation gave you a stick with it moment?
It was the episode with Jefferson Shoup. It was a conversation where he shares how hard it has been for him with debating with people with different opinions. And the story that made me feel uncomfortable was in which he shared a moment that he debated with a family member in a get together, and it became a very awkward environment.
Let's go ahead and listen to that clip then. This is Jefferson Shoup, author of The Bathwater Brigade. Here he is in that episode.
She would say something and I would fire back with something that was obviously completely logical, data-backed, everything airtight, or so I thought, something that seemed obvious. And so we sort of circled around each other. It went for about a half hour. I just couldn't stop. And finally it ended and things, you know, cautiously resumed the party. So that stuck with me, and I thought, I don't think I convinced her on anything. And she didn't convince me on anything. And so it got me, that was one thing that got me on the road to being a little more humble and curious.
So Henrique, what was it about that story in particular that was uncomfortable for you?
Yeah, so I started to see myself in the story. It was like a mirror was reflecting myself, and I started to see that the flaws that he was mentioning that he had could apply to me. And
are you somebody who also tends to debate politically or have political disagreements with family members?
I would say in the past I would have more, but I stopped. I started avoiding debates, and I thought it was the correct thing to do, but I started, as a consequence, I would avoid people that had different opinions, and I would start to see those people differently just because of that.
As what? Differently how?
So differently in how intimate I can be with the person.
Keeping them at arm's length a little bit, sort of,
yes,
creating a distance, like they were sort of a flat caricature rather than a full human.
Yes. So I would avoid deeper conversations, and I could see that affects our relationship, and it doesn't let it like become something bigger. And there's this one example. So I come from a conservative family, and when I got married, my wife's side of the family, they're not very conservative. And there's this one relative that she puts her opinions out there, and I'm very rational. So I tend to leave emotions aside when uncomfy topics come up. And sometimes I'll even detach myself emotionally from a family member or from a friend. And with this particular person, just like Jefferson Shoup said, I would put out like points of view that are backed up with statistics and numbers, and it wouldn't change a thing. And I started to avoid that person. I started to not let our relationship go deeper and My emotions started to become a little detached and mostly judgmental towards that person.
So Jefferson Shoup in the episode talks about how that conversation was one of the moments that got him thinking, maybe I need to start listening a little more, figuring out a different approach, because neither of us is changing our minds. Like, this isn't getting us anywhere. And he goes on to tell some stories about, like, embedding with people who really disagree with him and vice versa, and what he's able to learn about that is kind of an eye-opening moment. So for you, then, seeing yourself in Jefferson Shoup and then hearing the way he tried to change that aspect of his behavior, what did that feel like for you?
It felt like I have hope in changing what made me uncomfortable, in seeing his flaws in myself. And it started to make me think that the first step is to get involved emotionally with people that have different opinions on uncomfy topics, on challenging topics, instead of avoiding them. So that first step made me realize that with this one particular relative, I should start seeing her as a human being, as someone that has a background that is different than mine, as someone that had experiences that I don't know what happened in her life, like completely, that made her believe something. So that was the first step. And the second one, I'm still trying to get there, which is trying to get involved, right? When an uncomfy topic comes up, trying to listen instead of just giving out my rational opinion about things, right?
Enike, thank you so much for sharing your story today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us for this special Uncomfy Top of Mind crossover episode. I hope that as you continue to tune in to the podcast, you'll be able to have your own stick with it moments, and I would love to hear about them. You can reach us by email, topofmind@byu.edu or uncomfy@byu.edu. And you can connect with us on social media as well. And a big thanks to my whole team for being willing to share their stories so personally and vulnerably, and for continuing to really engage in this challenging work with me. It's so rewarding, and I couldn't have a better team. Top of Mind and Uncomfy are BYU Radio podcasts. Our team includes James Hoops, Samuel Benson, Elena Beck, Caleb Leach, Vanessa Goodman, and Enike Prado. Our audio production is handled by Gabe Vargas and Brandon Lewis. I'm Julie Rose. We'll talk soon.